Hello and welcome to A Hurler's Life with me, Brian Carroll. In this podcast, we chat with former greats of the game about their hurling lives. From the best manager they played under, to the one win that means the most to them. In every show, the guests will reveal the best six they ever hurled with. Joining me on this week's show is Jackie Turrell from James Stevens and Kilkenny. Jackie won an unbelievable 9 All-Ireland titles and 11 Leinsters with Kilkenny. During that period, he also went on to win 6 National Hurling Leagues. He played cornerback on what is, without doubt, the greatest hurling team we've ever seen. He also won 3 county titles and a Club All-Ireland with his club, James Stevens, back in 2005. This is A Hurler's Life with Jackie Turrell. A Hurler's Life is proudly sponsored by Golan Bake. Golan Bake is the home of the jambon, and you can buy their products in the supermarket freezer aisle to bake at home. Their range includes the nation's favourite, the ham and cheese jambon, as well as their new pepperoni pizza jambon and chicken fajita jambon flavours. Hurling and jambons, only in Ireland. Jackie, you're very welcome to the show. In 2016, you played no part in Kilkenny's run to All-Ireland, wherein the side or Tipperary ran absolutely riot, particularly their full forward line, who scored 212 in play. Yet despite having won 9 All-Irelands and was a trusted lieutenant for Brian Coley down through the years, he didn't turn to you. What was going through your head sitting on the line and in the immediate aftermath of that final?
Yeah, thanks very much, Brian. It's great to be on your podcast, A Hurler's Life. I'm looking forward to listening to some of the other lads. But I suppose, yeah, you're opening up there at the end of my career, really. And 2016 was a weird year for me. And I kind of decided at the start of the year that this was going to be my last year with Kilkenny. But I hadn't 100% signed off on it. I was pretty sure, but I said I'd see how the year went. It was frustrating from the point of view of game time and injuries. But I went into it with an open mind. And I always remember saying to myself at the start of the year, could I deal with the worst possible scenarios? And the worst possible scenarios for me were not playing for Kilkenny, not making the 26. And if I was comfortable with those, well, then I said, you know what, I'd go back, because what's the worst that can happen? I don't make the 26, and I'm okay with that. So I mulled with it for a while, and I said, yeah, I was. So didn't get much game time in the league, a few games here and there, came on played against Dublin and Galway, so it went okay. And then we were hit with a few injuries before the first game against Dublin in the Championship, and I'd actually been going really, really well. And the Saturday evening before we played Dublin, a week out from the game, we trained up in O'More Park in Portlaoise, because we're playing Dublin there the following Saturday, and I was flying. I put in about 2 or 3 really good weeks, had another good session that day, and played really well in the match. And at the end of the session, we did a small bit of shooting practice where just in twos, you'd strike the ball to a guy and maybe 40-50% collect the ball, head over the bar. It was a real warm day. And at the end of the session, doing that drill with Conor Fogarty, I tweaked my hamstring ever so slightly. It was so, small. I didn't have any concerns about it, but I actually ended up giving it a grade 1 tear and missed the game. So from then on, for the rest of the year, I was chasing my tail. In fairness, Shane Pendergast, who had kind of been in poor position, was injured at the time. So Rob Lennon came in, played really well that game, played well again in the Leinster final. Then Shane Pendergast came back. He won back his position. So it was frustrating, but I could see the lads were hurling well in front of me as well. And it's just a shift in mindset where you've always been used to playing. Now you weren't. And I always remember thinking to myself, God, when I was playing for Kilkenny for years, there was players there that didn't play, but they turned up every training session and pushed me to the pin of my collar. And I felt it was my dues as a good panel member. I remember I used to be marking John Joe Farrell a good, because he was always in that corner. And my duty was to get John Joe Farrell as ready as he could be for a Leinster final, whoever he'd be marking, or a Noel Connors of Waterford. So that was the kind of role I took. But then you get to the final, and after those 2 epic games against Waterford, where we just went dug so deep and came from nowhere, probably the first day to get a draw and win that magical second day in that Saturday evening in Turles, you're in the final against the old enemy Tipperary, and it was just so weird, Brian, being beaten, losing all Ireland is just such a horrific feeling. But sitting there, I always remember Brian asked me to warm up myself and Rob Lennon when things weren't going great in our backs, and they were getting a lot of scores. and I was warming up and I was stretching and my body shape was looking straight down the line at Brian, and as we did, Kevin Kelly got a goal. And that actually, without hurling well at all, put us a couple of points ahead. And I was doing a couple of more runs, and I remember just saying to Rob, I said, I'm going back up because I'm not coming on now, and I want to conserve my energy. And I went up and I sat back up. But I just got a sense that I wasn't coming on, that was my time to come on. I didn't. And I went up and I sat down, and things got worse from us. So it was really weird because you're just sitting there and you're so helpless. Tipperary are doing what they want, they're running right, and in particular to our full back line. And look, we didn't help. We always say we defend as a unit, so I thought our full back line probably were the scapegoats for a lot of them, particularly Joey Holden, who would have took a lot of criticism over it. But like, when you have top quality ball going into Seamus Cannellan, I remember one stage there was 40 yards of space in front, because I was a soldier as well once. I was, you know, when you're in there corner forward and you're marking top class forward and they're running right, so all these emotions are going through it, and then you're just there, is this your last game for Kilkenny? And before you know it, the clock hits 70 and you're looking at what I didn't even know what we're down last stage, but I knew it was all over. So it was not a good place to be in.
And while you were looking at the back line, as you said, they were under pressure. Were you burning to get out there onto the field, or was there a sense of, you know, that maybe this pace was too much for you?
No, when things were going against us, there's nothing I didn't want more was to be in the middle of that. To be, I always loved playing against the best and trying to survive in that environment in Croke Park where there's no hiding place. Oh, every fibre of my body just let me in there. I just wanted to go. I was peppering on the bench. And Rob Lennon did come in with and Lester came on, but I couldn't wait to get it. But then it did full 360, like with 6-7 minutes to go. The game was gone from them. They were throwing the ball around. And then I just thought to myself, what if Brian actually does turn and put me on? Because it would have been tokenism of the highest. I would have been going into not, like, the game was gone from at that stage. And then I was like, God, like, I can't turn now, not going in. And all this crazy stuff was going through my head. But at that moment in time, from like, I always wanted to get on the field, but particularly when things were going bad, I wanted to go in. And I felt we should have done something different. We should have maybe dropped someone back there just to steady the ship when they were getting the goals and just get a bit of parity, just get a foothold in the game and go from there. But, you know, we just seemed to down tools and more or less let Tip do what they want. And we never laid a glove on them. We never asked a question of them. We never rattled one or two of them. We never took a yellow card. And that's the disappointing thing. You walk away going, what if, you know, if Tipperary probably would have still won, but God at least put a test on him, lay a glove on him.
And when you go into the dressing room afterwards, did you know that was it for you?
I did, yeah. As soon as I find, to be honest, at 67 minutes, 68 minutes, I hadn't been brought on. The ship was sinking. Like, I didn't need any more confirmation. Our full back line was being tore asunder. I play in the full back line. I have all my life. And if you're not brought on when things are at its worst, and that was probably our worst performance ever, you know, you want to be very silly not to see the writing on. It wasn't even writing on the wall. It was right in front of me. So, yeah, I walked out onto the pitch and I just tried to pick up some of our lads that were really hurting over it. And I did. I fell for Shane Pendergast. I fell for all the lads, but I fell for the full back line because they had such a tough day. But I was also very conscious that this is my last day. Took a good look around Croke Park, walked down the tunnel, took my own time. And when I took off my jersey to Kenny, I just looked at, normally I just get it and throw it in the bag, just looked at it one more time. And just as I walked out the dressing room door, I just turned back. So I was very conscious that I probably will never be there again. And I definitely won't be there in a black and amber jersey. So, yeah, and I remember just walking up to the bar area and just meeting my wife and just floods of tears started to come because I knew it was the end.
And must have been tough in that immediate aftermath, you know, the banquet and the homecoming the next day. And, you know, I suppose in a way maybe you wanted to be on your own and with family.
Yeah, it is. So I found the City West the toughest, in a sense that you're just going back to the hotel and, you know, it's you've lost in all Ireland. You're absolutely gutted. The county is totally deflated. And to be fair, to lose in all Ireland is very hard. To lose once Tipperary, just a little harder, you know, and you know, you have to, you're so respectful of people coming up wishing you well and like just being there for you, but you just want to go into your own little bubble, and you do, you naturally just organically withdraw into yourself where there's not a whole lot of chat. Your poor old family are just there, you know, trying to console you, but you know, that's just part of life. And the next morning it was actually all our family had breakfast down, and we spoke about everything bar hurling. When everything around us was all around hurling, there was black and amber jerseys everywhere, there was people getting photos and autographs, and we spoke about everything except hurling, and it was actually nice just to snap out of it for a while, and people were respectful, they left you to your family for those, that hour. So yeah, and then you just go back to Kilkenny, and in fairness to Kilkenny, I always remember in 2010 when we lost the 5 in a row, it was probably the biggest crowd ever when we went back to Kilkenny, and you know, they turned out in their thousands as usual and welcomed us back. And I remember we had our homecoming on the pitch in Nolan Park, and when I came off the stage, I just slipped off and I went down to the Nolan Park dressing room and sat in the spot I always had, and just kind of took a couple of minutes, just kind of look around in the dressing room, and it was actually nice. And that was it. Before you know it, you wake up and it's Tuesday morning, the All Ireland is over, and life starts to go on again.
Okay, what an insight, Jackie, and probably bring it to probably one of more your better days. I'll ask you then, what was the one win of your hurling career that means the most to you?
Yeah, well, Brian, the one win that jumps out in my head all the time is 2013, a year we didn't win the All-Ireland, but we played Tipperary in a qualifier game in Nolan Park, and probably a lot of people think of it for the spectacle it was. For me, it probably started, you know, 3 weeks before that, we played Dublin in a first round. We drew. I'd had a quad. I actually hurt the quad again awfully in the first round. I wasn't right for the first day. I got back for the second day to replay again Dublin when Dublin beat us. And I gave it another little twinge in it. It just needed a couple of weeks of rest and rehab. And we'd lost to Dublin. And before you know it, a member in the dressing room, word filtering through that we were playing Tipperary. I think the draw was that night. And you've 7 days to get yourself right for Tipperary for a do or die game. And just like the squad was in bits. Henry was obviously a well documented, he had a broken metatarsal. He was not due to come back for another month. TJ Reid was carrying a hamstring. Larks had a knock. Paul Murphy had done bad ligaments in his ankle. Lads were literally on their knees. And we were just after being beaten in a replay by Dublin, and we had to pick ourselves up for Tipperary 7 days later. And you know what? It was the perfect thing for us. It's when we were all down in the dumps, there's nothing like the old enemy coming to town and your backs are to the wall for you to reach into the reserves of your pit and just to find stuff. I played that day and there's no way in hell I should have eaten the knee or hurling field. Paul Murphy was probably running on one and a half legs. Larks was gassed. TJ's hamstring wasn't right. He didn't last that long that day. Henry came on when he probably shouldn't have come on. But we just, I just remember the build up that week. It caught everyone off guard that this was a qualifier games, because Nolan Park couldn't hold a whole lot compared to a Croke Park. The tickets couldn't be got. But the game was on at 7 o'clock and the heat was sweltering. I remember taking a drive through the town that day and the town was electric from early on. And we were getting texts at maybe like 4 or 5 o'clock, and when Nolan Park opened, it was literally full within an hour, and it was still 2 hours to the game. We met in Nolan Park, or in New Park, for a bite to eat, and then we just went down to Nolan Park, and we were probably there maybe an hour before, and we're out pucking around in the corner of the pitch, and our dietitian ran out and just told us to get back in. We were sweating buckets just pucking around. It was that warm. But the whole game, it was just such a level of tension in Nolan Park. One of the greatest atmospheres I've ever played, and there was only probably 20-odd thousand even that day. And it was just old school, backs to the wall, just doing whatever you can. Just a leg in, a backside in, a hook. JJ blocked on Kelly down with his hand that if it went in, I'd have no doubts Tipperary would have beaten us. And he just literally just thrown himself. And I think it just hit his thumb and deflected over the bar. Lark Harbour was causing us trouble. He went off with a hamstring. It was so you couldn't write some of the stuff that was happening. Then when Henry was announced before the game that he was going to start, it took the roof off the place. And then when he came on and he set up Richie Power for a score, it was just pure we were not going to be beaten that day. If we had to hurl with one leg, we would. We didn't win that year. We went on and we struggled to beat Waterford after extra time the following day. Then Cork beat us well in Thurles a couple of weeks after that. But that day, I was just so proud of us that we just drew a line in the sand and we said, whatever about the rest of the year, today in Nolan Park, we're not losing to Tipperary. And it was just one of the greatest atmospheres and games that I've ever played in. And I look back on it with such fond memories. I can detail small little minute things that just you don't think about. You just don't recall with other games. And it was just the traffic after the game. We had to walk down to Langton's afterwards and the streets were packed. The pubs were packed. It was like a homecoming of an All-Ireland. And we just won a qualifier game. That was the magnitude of it. But I think people just respected that where the squad was, where the injury levels were, that this Kilkenny team just rolled up their gloves and just gritted an unbelievable performance and just got over the line.
It was an act of defiance almost by that team. But you defied all the odds personally as well, because as you said earlier on, there's no way you should have played that game. The work you put in away from the field with Brother Damien in particular to get you to play that game, you documented it in your autobiography, but you might take us through that.
Yeah, so it was just straight away after that Dublin game and Brother Damien, who was a huge influence on my life and helped me so much on and off the field. I just rang him after the game and we'd become really good friends, and he would do a lot of work with me mentally and physically. You know, he would give me rubs, he'd stretch me out, but he'd also talk to me and challenge me about certain stuff. And I went out to him that evening when I got back from Fort Leash and we spoke, and he just did some work on me quad and he said, look, this is possible, but you have to put in some unmerciful week. And it was great to get that clarity because I trusted him so much. And I said, like, I'm going to be fine. Well, I mightn't be fine Saturday, but I'll be able to do myself justice on the field on Saturday. Well, like I was going to maybe 2-3 times a day. He was working on my mind. I had to do a fitness test the Friday before the game. He told me that I'd get through it, but like I was probably putting that enough to 4 or 5 hours a day, maybe out in the morning, maybe out again at lunchtime that day, and maybe out that evening again, and then maybe the Wednesday we started jogging and increasing it. And I did a fitness test with Kilkenny, with Brian Martin and Mick Dempsey, and Damien had been prepping me mentally. He says, you will get through this if you decide this in your head, you will make it happen. And I did. I don't know how I did. My quad was still sore, and I remember Brian talking to me afterwards, because I was probably running at 85-90%. He said, you're okay, aren't you? And he was just wanting me to convince him. But I wasn't convinced I was going to, but I was not missing that game. I was like, I'll be fine, Brian. I'll be fine. However long I'm on that field, I won't let you down. And I suppose when he heard that, he rolled the dice at me. I didn't know if I was going to make 70 minutes. And I always remember Damien said that he heard my dad talking to Richie Hogan's dad in the stand before the game, and they asked, Richie Hogan's dad asked my dad, how's Jackie? He says, I couldn't see him lasting the 70 minutes. And so that they obviously got that vibe off me last week, during the week, the concern that I had. But I just started playing, and after the first couple of balls, I just forgot about it. I knew it was there, but you just get on. But all the lads did. Like Paul Murphy, his ankle was still bits, like the bruising on it. Henry had still a broken metatarsal, but the gloves are off, Brian. You do anything to play for Kilkenny. And when Tipperary come to town and you're backed up to the wall and the county are depending on you to come up trumps, well, you just answer the call, whether you last a minute, 2 minutes, 20 minutes. If you hit 2 balls, 10 balls, if you don't hit a ball at all, you can contribute. You can do something. And Taggy Fogarty, he came back from a broken ankle. So, and we all vibed off that. We all vibed like you would... I remember talking to some of the lads. Tommy had, I think, bruised ribs. And I was like, how are the ribs? And Tommy would never say he had an injury on the guy. He said, they're okay, they're sore. But there was never a doubt I'm not playing or I'm not available for selection. And when you see, God, he's doing that, well, that'll give you going, right, well, I know I'm probably not right, but I have to. You just get that sense that everyone is in this together and we're not pulling out of this and we just have to go toe-to-toe with Tipperary. And that was just the manic week. It was crazy. But you just do that. You just have to be on the field come 7 o'clock Saturday evening.
Brother Damien had a huge role in a lot of the Kilkenny players' personal lives and obviously hurling lives at that time. Kilkenny never had a sports psychologist. They never probably needed one because Brian Cody had such an influence on you mentally, along with Mick Dempsey and whoever his selectors were. But Brother Damien, you'll attest, was gave himself selflessly to people. He epitomised everything that is good about the Christian brother vocation that he had. And I would like to think, from what I've heard about him, he not only improved his hurlers, but he improved his men first and foremost.
Yeah, Brian, you couldn't have described him any better. Like, just a great man, but not just, he didn't just help me as a sporting person. He helped so many people in other facets of their lives, but he definitely shaped me to be a better man today. I just, by coincidence, came across him, and we just started doing a bit of work. I was going out to him thinking I had a bad hamstring, and he was helping me out, and he was giving me rubs, he was stretching it out, we were doing strengthening work. But I soon found out afterwards that I was just walking away feeling better, feeling lighter myself, and I soon realised, I was like, I don't really know what's going on here, but he's making me mentally stronger, I'm becoming more comfortable with myself, I'm becoming not as down on myself after bad performance. I just feel better every time I leave him. And I soon realised that he was actually doing more work between my two ears than he was actually in any part of my body. Now, don't get me wrong, some of the stuff he'd done physically for me was hugely advantageous. And you could see, as my career got better, I probably got fitter, I got leaner, I got better on the turn. I was lighter on my feet. For a guy that was always targeted, that was slow and cumbersome, and rightly so in my early part of my career, that was now becoming an area of my game that I didn't have any concerns about once I became mentally more stronger. And it was just letting go of doubts, where I was always beating myself up after games and looking for the negatives. I started to look at the positives and starting working on stuff that I can control. And that just helped me hugely. He was always at the end of the phone. It didn't matter. Like, I remember when we drew the All-Ireland 2012 and we came back that night. Like, I went out to him, that was like maybe 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30, but he would challenge me. He challenged me after the game that I wasn't light enough on my feet that day. I started to fatigue too early. I started to bend over. And that was a sure sign that I was tired and fatigued when I started to bend over. And he would identify things that other people wouldn't see. And we would work on him. But he said, you know what, Jackie, the start of the replay doesn't start tomorrow morning, Monday morning. It starts tonight, Sunday night. So he pushed me to the pin of the collar, but I wanted it. I looked for that. I looked for him to challenge me to the max to get the best out of myself. And it just became really, really close. We became like, he really zoned in on things that I could do. We'd be checking weights when I broke my metatarsal, my foot. We would continue to do stuff. We would work on my mentality of what happens when a lad gets a goal off me. What happens when a lad gets a score? Well, it's not to doubt yourself. Now is the time to back yourself and to continue to get out in front and not to be careful and not to be hoping that the ball doesn't go into the corner, be looking for it to come into the corner. And like, you know, the performances that I would have given in big games would have been down so much to him. We started practicing a thing that was never even on my radar. He was like, I see you in positions on the field when a point is possible. And I remember just looking, I'm a cornerback then and I'm not there to score. I shouldn't even be thinking about it. But we actually worked on it, and we would do drills on the field. And lo and behold, in All-Ireland in 2000 and in 2009, I got a score. And I'd never fist pump. And that day, I just automatically did, because I just thought of him up in the stand and all the work. And we'd done hours of work on that. And here it had to come to fruition. And when all these small things started coming, the more faith and the more open and honest I became with him. And he just, you know, I could talk hours about the great man, and he was just such a help to me, but more so mentally than physically.
And mentally, in terms of your own career and your relationship life, like, did he offer much advice in that perspective?
Oh, absolutely. Like, he would have shaped every form of relationship with me, my outlook on life, about work, about family, about honesty levels, about being the person that you could be, not wasting your talents. And he would have, yeah, we would have done a lot of work on personal stuff as well, and things, baggage that would have held up. And the big thing for me was in 99, I played full back in a minor All-Ireland semi-final. You probably remember it. And David Ford scored 5 points for me from play. I was terrible the same day, but I never addressed it. And it just festered with me, that doubt and that bad experience. It was always just there. And no matter how many good games I played, there was only one bad game of going, Asher, I knew I was never good enough to play for Kilkenny, and I'll just always be a club hurler. And that was the narrative around that time. I had bad days under 21, but I never addressed him, and that festered underneath me. And it was only when I addressed him and spoke to him about Damien, that I let him go on that. If I did have a bad game, I'd let it go. Come Monday morning, I wouldn't be beating myself up with you. But right, what am I going to do about it? What are the positives I can take from it? What can I learn from it? This was the kind of process that we would do. He would say, do something positive to make yourself feel better. Don't just go home and bottle yourself up and be given out to yourself. And the greatest kind of, one of the great examples he gives me, he goes, if you have a bad game and you go home to your family, what way are you? And I'd say, oh, should I'd be short. And if they ask me about the game, I'd just ignore them. And he said, and if you walked down the street an hour later and or an hour before and you met a stranger and they asked you about the game, what would you be? Well, actually, I said, I'd chat to him. I'd talk to him about the game. I said, so there's people that love you, that support you, that are there for you thick and thin, and you treat them like that. But yeah, a person that means nothing to you and possibly could be on the terrace giving out about you, you talked and you give them time. And it was small things like that made me realise what's important in life and made me realise what I kind of need to do. And, you know, even in my own work life, he challenged me to go for jobs that I would have been afraid to before. It would have helped me with interviews and things like that. So it was right across the board. He transformed every way I looked and my view on life.
And you didn't probably come across brother Damien until 2009. And at that stage, you had won a couple of All-Irelands, had a couple of All-Stars won. In fact, you had captained Kilkenny to a National Hurling League Leinster title and All-Ireland final in 2006. Yet they were some of the most stressful periods in your hurling career.
Yeah, they were, and I go back to it because the underlying doubts and fears I had of bad days, and I think every GAA player struggles with loss of form and loss of confidence and doubts, but the really good players and the mentally strong players are able to get over that and not let them affect them and just move on and get onto the next game and just park it, and it's just a bad game. But whereas other people think about it too much and overanalyze it and self-doubt themselves and look at the things they did wrong in the game and go, yeah, which were, I am too small, and no wonder I got pushed off that ball, or I'm not great in the air, no wonder that guy caught it over me. And that's where he came in and helped me hugely and made me kind of realise what I need to do. And obviously the physical stuff that he did with me got me fitter, got me faster, and I was able to see that. I was able to see the improvements. So I had so much faith in him on it. But, you know, 2006, like, that was one of the things. Like, I didn't really enjoy the year because I was so riddled with self-doubt, and then I got dropped that year and had a lot of poor games. I had a poor All-Ireland semi-final. And I don't feel, I probably wouldn't have played the All-Ireland final only for JJ hurt his knee ligaments in the lead up to the final, I had a poor All-Ireland semi final and I felt I wasn't going to make it. So, you know, I wouldn't say I enjoyed it. I didn't sleep the night before the All-Ireland because I was just so racked with self guilt and, or, you know, a lack of confidence. And I knew the talk was around that I wasn't good enough, and I was just worried more worried about what people are saying in the stand than actually worrying about myself and what my own performance and controlling what I could control as regards my own preparation. And that's what Damien said. Take the power away from the people that don't matter and self-empower yourself to do something about it. But yeah, it wasn't until kind of 2009, which is mad to say, that I didn't really feel that I warranted or I justified being a Kilkenny cornerback. Up to that, I was always doubting myself. But as the years went on and every game I played better, eventually I arrived where, you know what, I deserve to be here. I deserve to be cornerback on the Kilkenny team. I deserve to be an All-Star. I'm really enjoying my hurling, and from then on it kind of parachuted on the rest of my career.
Okay, so Damien obviously had a huge influence on your hurling life as you progressed, as you just said. And you've had some fair managers over the years too, both for your club, in the lines of Adrian Finan, obviously, current principal of the St. Kieran's, Cheddar Plunkett, Niall Rigney, Pat Critchley. In college, you had some people like John Myler, Davy Fitz, and obviously then with Kilkenny, you had the great Brian Cody. But so I have to ask you then, who is the best manager you've ever played under?
Yeah, well, I suppose as a manager, he managed me under 21 with Kilkenny, Martin Fogarty. He was just brilliant for me at a time when I was just probably going through a bad phase, made me captain of the under 21, gave me the responsibility. But he just had a lovely way of breaking down the barriers and talking to you on a one-to-one. I remember when I was dropped in 06 and he'd been a selector then with Brian at that stage, Carl, and we sat down and we had a bit of a chat and things like that. But he was great for breaking down the barriers and talking one-to-one. I would always loved if Damien had managed me, but that never happened. But he was just, I think Martin was ahead of his time as regards how he looked at the game, the actual skills of the game. And he definitely, with Kilkenny and me, improved my skill level by like 10-20%. And he just brought the game down to be so simple. And he always would say, like, the game is just about the simple skills and who can execute them the quickest and the fastest in the most intense environment. And that's what we worked on, first touch, catch and block and hook. And he would define them. He would have them, like, small, minute things of where you hold your hand on the hurl and things like that. And I just got so much of him. And who also reminded me of that and was definitely, without doubt, ahead of his time with Pat Christie when he managed us with the Village in 2003. And he was unbelievable as regards looking at the game. He actually started doing a bit of tactical work with us, but more so, he was of the same philosophy of Martin Fogarty, of the skills element and of working on the skills. And he would have brought really high-level skill to our club and drills to improve it as well. But I would have to say, probably overall, Martin Fogarty, and he had a lovely way about him. He could release the room of tension with a joke. He was great on the computer. He could doctor up things and he'd build a great spirit. And I do believe when he was selected with Brian, all the small, so important, little nitty-bitty bits in between Brian were talking to lads, them all going. I'd say he'd done a lot of work without even Brian knowing, reaching out to lads, giving phone calls, meeting lads when Brian probably didn't know, and just keeping lads motivated. And he did a lot of great work with our panel on the back end of it, of the subs, because if you're fighting for a position, you're going to do to hold down that position. He kept all those lads in tune. There was never anyone throwing their ties out of pram. He was talking to lads, keeping lads motivated. You're going well, you're not that far away from the team. And he had a lovely personality, Martin, and I'm sure people up and down the country who are coming contacting with him in his coaching role with Croke Park can see that he just has a lovely way about him. And I do believe that he walked away from the Kilkenny panel to give his son Connor an opportunity to probably grow, because he probably felt with his dad there he was probably limited. And you see what Connor's done the last couple of years, and that's the magnitude of the man. But a great, great hurling man.
Super, Jackie. Then I need to ask you, what would be the biggest regret you have about your hurling career?
I suppose, going back to my point originally, I was definitely too hard on myself earlier on in my career. And you know, hurling is a sport and there to be enjoyed. But when you have a bad game on a Sunday and come Wednesday, Thursday, you're still beating yourself up over about and down. That's not a good place to be. And I would definitely say, I know we're all our own worst critic, but I was definitely way too hard on myself. I suppose from on the sporting field, like I know in 2011 that I hit Seamus Conlon a dirty dig. A lot of people probably remembered. I definitely regret that. I shouldn't have done it. If the referee picked up on it, he possibly could have given me a red card back then. If you did it now, you would definitely get a red card. It was something that I shouldn't have done. It was instinctive. I remember Shamey had kind of given Brian Hogan a bit of a dirty dig in Turles in the league final earlier that year. And he dislocated Hogan's shoulder, and I always remember it. And I probably just seen him, and I seen him open, and I shouldn't have done it. That would definitely be a regret of mine. But outside of that, I would say, like, obviously, I wouldn't say I regret losing matches, because I believe losses shaped me, losses motivated me, losses made me put perspective on the wins. But I would try to balance it up in the sense that not have the losses too low or the wins too high, because I think if you can get them somewhere leveled out, it puts perspective on. When you do win, of course, they celebrate, go crazy and enjoy it. But I'd also feel that the losses sometimes, you know, when we lost in 2010, God, the low of that was so low. But you learn from these. And then when you do lose, like, I think, I'm not going to say you ever get used to losing, but it puts perspective on it when other things happen in your life. And particularly we lost the county final last year, and having a little lad, a little boy now, it definitely, you know, when you go home to the house, he doesn't want to know that you lost the county final. He just wants to know when his next bottle is coming or where's his daddy. So I think that kind of stuff definitely helps with putting perspective on it. And I wouldn't be a thing that you regret things. I think losses and their challenges. And that's one thing Damien always seen. They're not negative. It's a challenge. It's an opportunity to grow. It's an opportunity to improve. And that's the way I would kind of look at it now.
Brilliant. You mentioned that when you won that you certainly enjoyed yourselves, and I have to agree with you from that perspective. Dunlop referred to you as the Stepford Wives, but the Kilkenny players that I know that I hurled with both in St. Kieran's and in Leinster, you were far from robots, and you certainly knew how to let your hair down. You had some great characters.
Yeah, we did, Brian. We were like any other team. You know, when you get a win, and even if it's just a win a match or whatever, you go and you celebrate and we'd have the best time ever. And maybe the fact that there was no social media around then, we obviously hid probably a lot of the stuff. You know, and we obviously, I'd know you from our Kieran's College days and from our days with Leinster as well. He would equally celebrate as much as us. But I suppose Don Logue was probably looking at us going, you just go out to win games, they're faceless, they don't give much off in interviews and things like that. And that was his view on it. And I always remember doing my book with Christy O'Connor, and, you know, we were rehashing stories after All Ireland's and winning and celebrating and the crack we get up there. He'd stop me one day and he goes, us in the media thought you were just, literally used that word faceless. You just won a game, you went home to bed, and that was it. But I'm only seeing now what he actually did. And at that time, I suppose, we were all coming into the media. Henry was in the media. Tommy was in the media, JJ. And probably people seeing, God, you know what? They have another sound hurling. They have life stories. They are characters. They have bits of crack in their lives as well. But I suppose we were so serious about our hurling that we knew the time to you know, if you won a match and you went out on the beer on the Sunday night and the Monday, that was it. You were back training maybe Tuesday or Wednesday and it was on to the next one. We knew come January that was cut off point. It was a new season, and you were off to drink and you were back training. You were back in that mental space. But I suppose probably a lot of people would have seen Brian kind of being the spearhead of that, and the way he would have been so calculated in his media interviews. And a lot of us would have been the same as well. And it's like Dublin probably now at the minute. You know, people probably think they're kind of that ilk as well. But you see from Jack McCaffrey, you see the other guys within that panel, you know, they're really good lads behind the scenes. And, you know, but we didn't really care what people said. We didn't get hung up on it. People got column inches out of it. And that's fine. That's the way the world goes out. I've come out and seen the other side of the media world. That's what people read. That's what fills up column inches. That's what media people talk about. But it didn't deteriorate from what we were doing. It didn't detract. We were so focused. It was the next training session. It was the next training session. It was the next match. And we just took it literally like that.
Did you get a kick out of the fact that people thought you were almost backward, that it was just about hurling, when in fact you'd one of the most professional setups in the country? Mick Dempsey was ahead of the curve. You'd fantastic physios, dietitians, Racker Cody running a very tight ship, but you had loads of protein, grips, everything you needed for him in terms of players. Yet there was this persona out there that, you know, you just turned up and hurled.
We didn't need for anything. We just get on, we trained. We had a great county board who facilitated all that. Other counties maybe had issues around payments, and you know, the Cork lads went on strike and they got their improvements, but ours was, we never needed for anything. We got our expenses paid, whatever we looked for, we got. We didn't go over the top with scientific stuff or anything like that, but whatever the management felt needed or we needed to do, we just did it. And we just, you know, I suppose other counties, I don't know if they looked on with envy or whether they looked on and said, Jesus, they're very simplistic in their approach. But we didn't really look a whole lot into it. We just kept looking forward, and it was but behind it all, it was hugely, hugely professional. Like, there was, we didn't want for anything. We were Mick Dempsey was very much ahead of the curve. Like in off seasons, Mick would go to Australia to Aussie Rules. He would look what they're doing. He'd look in other sports. And if he thought it could contribute in any way, I'm sure it'd be some sort of a level of a conversation of trying to sell it into Brian that we're bringing in X, Y, or Z. But if Brian definitely respected Mick, and if Mick came with something, Brian would definitely listen to him and take it on board.
Very good. And in terms of then your career, Jackie, you know, you were initially in CIT and then you moved on to LIT and you're with Glanbia. So how did hurling influence your career pathway?
Yeah, well, I would say, I suppose it was, you know, my career was never really my priority, and that's probably bad to say, but it was, you know, I was just kind of going along. I went to Kieran's, obviously, and I loved it in there. You know, we would have hurled all the way up through the years, and after that, I always had I would have worked in the summer in construction, so I had an idea. I go into construction, I just went to Cork. And I did a degree then. I finished in Limerick in construction economics. I never really had any one thing that I definitely want to be that in life. I want to be a solicitor, I want to be a teacher, whatever. I was just kind of, to be honest, just plodding along really. And then I started working, and then the recession kicked in, and things in the construction industry went nosedived, and a position became available in Glanby in 2008. I went for it and got it, and I've been there since, and really happy in my current role working for Glanby. And obviously there's a huge carryover there because they sponsored the Kilkenny team as well. But I would say hurling, how it would have affected me, hurling became so important to me when I made the Kilkenny team. And my career would have, it would have been second to it. A lot of my decisions would have been based around how will this affect my hurling, how will this affect my preparation, my sleep patterns, my eating habits. And I would have built my day around work as regards for my training. So like if I was training that evening, I wouldn't have taken any long journeys. I would have been very meticulous in my preparation. So it affects usually like all my reference points for each day. You know, when I used to wake up every day, the first thing that would come to my mind would be, am I training today? Today gym day, today rest day, what have I going on? Am I injured? Am I okay? Do I need any rest rehab? Do I need to see Brother David today? And then after that, everything just evolved out of it. It fell out of it. I was working, whatever. And I based my day around that. And that was it for maybe 10 years of Kilkenny, that when you woke up, hurling was number one in your head. You made all your decisions based on that, and everyone else just fitted in around it, whether it's relationship, girlfriends, family. And you don't really have a social life, but if you had a few bits and pieces going on, well, then the decisions were made with that reference point of how will this affect my training and my preparation, and if it implicated in any stage, well, then you just didn't do it. You didn't go to the 21st that you're meant to that night, or you didn't go to that concert because you're training the next day and you probably wouldn't be getting home till 12, 1 o'clock, or you didn't go there because you wouldn't be able to eat healthy and that kind of a thing. So it consumes your thought process, and you check in with that every day. Like, you know, you're driving along the car, am I drinking enough water? Right, I'm going to this town next, is there somewhere I can eat healthy there? And they were the kind of conversations you'd have in your head. What time can I get home at? I won't stop for an hour lunch because I want to get home and have a bit of a nap, or I need to foam roll before I go to training. And those constant check-ins, I got security and I got kind of comfort out of knowing that was the way I did it. And some lads didn't think like that. Some lads just go, they thought about if we were training at 7 o'clock, I'm sure Tommy Welsh sometimes training would only come into his head maybe at 4 o'clock going, God, I better eat something now, we're training at 7 o'clock, whereas mine was, I was probably preparing since I woke up at 7:30 that morning.
So you obviously needed a very understanding boss in terms of allowing you time off or time to prepare to the best of your ability. But has that changed since you've retired?
Well, I suppose my whole obsession and that whole being consumed about playing, you know, it would have leveled off a bit. When I finished with hurling with Kilkenny, Glanby were very good to me, very understanding of my commitments. My boss was very good to me, but I needed to give back to them. And you know what? Hurling wasn't the number one on me. Number two was probably my career, my family. And then maybe number three was hurling. And you still have that structure within your life, but it's not as intense, it's not as rigorous, and now that I'm not hurling senior next year, it obviously nosedives down a small bit more. And your diet and your preparation and your foam rolling and the meticulous rehab, that really, it doesn't go out the window completely, but it goes down a good few gears, and you just ease into another stage of your life. And I've changed roles in my job now, which I have to be in Dublin a lot more. And that's the way I want it. I want to develop my career. I want to develop as a person. And obviously I want to have hurling in my life, but at a much lower level. And it just changes, it evolves. I now have a family, we're expecting our second child. That's obviously really important on my priority list. So I now have a stage where maybe two years ago, the thoughts of not training with my club, it wasn't even on my radar. Whereas now, if the little lad isn't settling come 7 o'clock, well, you know what? I'll give training a miss and I'll catch up with another bit maybe tomorrow, and I'll just stay at home and mind him. And that's the way it is. And you know what, Brian, I couldn't keep going the way I was, because I remember my girlfriend at the time, who was now my wife, she said, if you stay going the way you are, you'd be in a madhouse at this stage, because you just had yourself drove crazy. Like when she was living with me, you wouldn't dare put a bar of chocolate in her kitchen. She had to store it upstairs in her room in her drawer. And she was just like, this is just madness. But she adjusted her lifestyle to it. And that was just the way it was. And I always remember saying, when I went shopping in Super Value, I thought people were crazy looking at me, because I'd be going around and I'd be looking at maybe some sort of a soya sauce, and I'd be looking at the potassium levels in the back versus a rival brand. And I was just, you know, at that time I thought that was the norm, but it wasn't. And that's why I say I couldn't keep going like that, because I wouldn't be enjoying my life. But that was just the obsession I had with playing with Kilkenny at that time.
Did you ever break out and go mad in the chocolate?
Oh, of course I did, yeah. You know, when I went back training in January, Super Bowl, I'd always have in the back of my head. That was always around the 4th, 5th of February. And I would I'd pig out that night, and then I'd maybe have another one. But, like, you'd have maybe your 3 days every second Sunday or things like that, because, you know, I suppose you have a girlfriend and you want to keep her as well. And if you're just constantly just eating pasta and rice and all that, you know, they'll get pissed off with that after a while. So, yeah, of course you do. It's all about the balance. And sometimes my balance was extreme in hurling. But do you know what? That's what makes me the person I am.
Brilliant, Jackie. But aside from hurling then, like, what else do you have a passion for?
Aside from hurling? I couldn't say that I have like a huge passion for many other things. I would say, like, I definitely love American football. I always kind of have in the last 10 years. My team are the Dallas Cowboys. They're like, they're called America's team. They're very arrogant. They're very boisterous. They're very in your face. They're not really liked. But I like them. I just think they're a great franchise. The owner, Jerry Jones, is very obnoxious, but he's a very colourful character. But I love the game in the sense that I love the tactics, the plays. I love how much goes into it. I love how actually the media treat the game and the exposure it gets, how they market their game. Like, I've been to America a few times, and how they talk about their game, and even tailgating before it. So it's so open to supporters and engages with supporters, and the fun that they have with it. I just think it's great. And I even brought on my honeymoon, my wife, I twisted her arm and I brought her to an American football game. She doesn't know anything about American football, but really enjoyed the game. But, you know, it's just so interesting. The characters that are in it are just really, they're really great. They're really corrupt. A lot of drugs in the game. There's a lot of misdemeanors, but, like, you know, there's always a story on it. Even the off season, and you take Tom Brady now, well, you know, I think he's 43 and he's going to Tampa Bay, still striving to win another Super Bowl, and all that goes with it. You know, you finish the Super Bowl and run about the draft, which is great because it keeps it so even. So the draft, and being the worst team from the previous year, gets the first pick of the college players coming out the next year. So they're going to get a great player, and a quarterback can change the franchise around. So there's always that level where you could be poor 1 year, 2 years later, you could nearly win a Super Bowl. And that's the real attractive part of it, that it yearns parity. And, you know, it just kind of makes you realize how great the Patriots are and the dynasty that they've done the last couple of years. But it's just a really enjoyable sport to watch.
And apart from American football, would there be anything else?
To be honest, Brian, as you can attest to, with a wife and a child, and another one on the way, I'm still playing a bit of club hurling. I obviously have my media commitments with RTE, with the Irish Times, and I'm trying to just give back to a family that have given me 14 years of a support network that allowed me to get the best out of myself, giving back to them. So I've quite a lot going on. I do a bit with Littlewoods, Ireland as well. So there's a huge lot on my plate at the minute, and it's very full on, but I'm really enjoying a different phase of my life that is probably dictated by family and work, and that's the way I like to have it. That's there my priority at the minute. I love still being involved with the club, playing a bit of junior this year, and then hopefully as I retire from hurling, get involved with the club, maybe a bit of coaching, and see where that takes me.
And I saw on your Twitter lately you were out and enjoying nature with your family. I think, you know, you've had an opportunity now to slow down and probably appreciate all that's good there.
Yeah, without a doubt, Brian. It's the simple things, like it's the weekends of being able to go for a bit of lunch with your family, go for a walk in Castle Park. I've slowed down so much, and my wife says to me all the time that I've gone so soft with the little lad now as well, and she's right. But that's just the nature of, that's the way you evolve as a person. And, you know, that manic craziness of when I woke up first thing in the morning, trying to finish as early as possible from work to get a rest for training, Like, you can only do that for so long. I would have liked another couple of years with Kilkenny, but sure, the body, when the body starts giving up, you got to listen to it. And I was always very, very aware that I wanted to go back to my club in a reasonably, really good state physically, that I could give 2-3 years of really driving the club on to try win a county final. We didn't win one, but I do believe that I went back and I emptied myself into the club, into the senior setup, to drive the club to a county title. And I wanted to go back and be able to train as much as possible, not go back and be a wreck from your 14 years with Kilkenny. So I do believe that going in 2016 was the right decision for me from a club point of view as well.
And you've mentioned how manic you were and how obsessive you were about your hurling, and now that's more or less all gone. Is it a bit of a relief, you know, not that you'd have a regret that you would have changed anything, but is it a relief that, you know, you now have different priorities and almost a weight off your shoulders?
There is a small bit of relief, absolutely, that I can actually have a decision going, do you know what, actually, I won't go training tonight because I'm tired, or I want to spend time with Claire and Freddie, or, you know what, Claire needs a bit of time off, I'll take Freddie tonight, because she would have brunted all that when I was training. So it is lovely to have that relief where you can actually make a decision going, do you know what, I don't actually need to go to the gym tonight, or I don't need to train. That's gone on me. I loved every minute of it, and I have great memories to look back on. And wasn't I very lucky to be able to do it, but I do miss it.
Jackie, thanks so much for sharing that side of your life. We're on to the big one, and I'm now going to ask you to pick the best 6 players you've ever played with. So we'll start with your goalkeeper.
Yeah, okay. Well, my goalkeeper, it would have to be Owen Murphy of Kilkenny and Glenmore. Probably only played with him not as much as probably other keepers. He came at a stage where I was exiting and he was coming on, but we did play for a couple of years, and just a phenomenal goalkeeper. Just his skill level is sensational, but how he's developed as a goalkeeper, his presence, his puck outs, his range of skills, but it's just his reflexes and he's just his shot stopping ability, I've never seen anything like it. And there was a time there, probably near the end of my career, when a guy got in behind me, I'd clearly be expecting to save it. He was that good. And when lads would score a goal, you'd be kind of nearly looking at him disappointed, going, he didn't bail me out that time, or for sure he was one-on-one on him, but he was so good in those situations, so brave, so fast, but just his reflexes, his skill level, his hand-eye coordination, a brilliant goalkeeper to play behind. You could a high ball going into the square, you just look at your man, just hold your man out, because Murph had it, caught it, and it was gone every single time. A great guy, great goalkeeper to have behind you.
Okay, fantastic. And then in your fullback line, who would you pick?
Yeah, well, I suppose if going for a fullback, and I would without doubt say the best hurler that I ever played with is JJ Delaney. I count myself so lucky to have played in an unbelievable Kilkenny team with some of the greatest hurlers ever. But when you think about how lucky was I for probably the first half of my career, I had JJ Delaney playing in front of me. And then the second half of my career, I had him playing beside me. I always was cocooned by JJ Delaney in the sense that he had a shielded both ways, but what a defender, what a player. When he played half back in front of me, he was just always there. He was unbelievable in the air. He was always there for me when if I slipped. He was just, I remember in 2007 All Ireland, I think Brian Murray, the first ball he got, he poked it down on top of JJ. He caught it, hit it down, he got a score. Then I think the second one, he poked it down over Tommy Welsh's wing and he caught it and put it back into the forwards. And I don't think he was ever going to go down the middle on Brian Hogan. I remember, I think the third puck I was looking back on where he just puts his hands out as if to say, where am I to go with this, lads? I think I might just hit it into the stand. But, you know, JJ just epitomised. He was just his skill level. He was unbelievable. Not many players can revert back from wing back to full back seamlessly, do what he did. He will probably be remembered for that unbelievable hook on Seamus Callanan. But he just had it all, Brian. He was good in the air, deceptively quick, 2 great hands. But he just had this innate ability to sense danger and be in the right place at the right time. And he was just a joy to play beside and behind. And for me, the best player that I ever played with.
Brilliant. And then on your half-back line?
On my half-back line, I would have the one and only Tommy Welsh. swashbuckling, charismatic, spirit, fire, drive. And the only thing you could say about Tommy Welsh is that if he's playing an Oireachtas game, he'll treat that the exact same as an All-Ireland final, and he will go as hard in both games. Just one of the greatest characters I've ever came across off the field, but on the field, by God, he would do anything to win. He would kill to win. He was an unbelievable teammate to play beside. He just oozed fighting. He oozed not laying down. He'd fight in his back. And Tommy probably wasn't the fittest, but you want to see that lad running around the field, and he could be coming halfway in the group, and you might be a little fitter on him maybe at some stage in the year, and you could run by him in maybe a big long run, and he'd throw an elbow, or he'd try kick you or take you down, and this is just running. Like, he just did not want to lose. He refused to lose or to give up or to let anyone pass him, and he just brought that into every aspect of his game. And like, to think of the size of him and how he mastered the high ball, how he was great on the ground. He just seemed to be everywhere. He could contribute with scores. I mean, what can you say about Tommy Welsh, the player? It's all been said, but for me, without doubt, I'd have him on my half back line.
You've picked two of the greatest defenders of any generation there, in JJ and Tommy Welsh. So, yeah. Midfield, Jackie.
Midfield, I would say probably a guy. Probably didn't get the best of himself completely, but the few years he had when he was at top of his game, I don't think there was anyone ever better, and it was Chad Fitzpatrick, an absolute dynamo of a midfielder, and probably wasn't the quickest, wasn't the fastest, but when he was from 2006 to 2009, he was just unbeatable. Like, him and Tommy on the one wing, if you hit that ball down there, either Tommy would catch it or Chad win the break, and for 3 years in a row, won three All-Ireland, captain the three in a row, I think won three All-Stars, and just couldn't be beaten, but had such a lovely pair of hands, great feet, but a great eye to pick a pass, to pick a score, but just was in the right place at the right time all the time, and just a great character off the field as well. But I just loved playing with Cha, and you always knew he was thereabouts, and when you got a ball and you picked up your head, Cha was there, and it was always the right thing to do, give him the ball, and he always made the right decision with it, and was, for a small man as well, great in the air, would pick off a few lovely scores, and just an absolute joy. And like, he was always a forward, and I think it was Adrian Finan when he was under 21 with Kilkenny, played the seniors in a challenge match, and he was playing for the under 21s, and they put him back midfield, and he was a revelation. And 2 weeks later, Brian played a midfield for the seniors, and he just took off. And maybe the game in 2010 and 11 got a bit away from Chad's regards to athleticism, and maybe caught up with him a small bit. But you know, from 2006 to 2009, he was the best midfielder in the country and couldn't be beaten.
Excellent. And your half forward line then?
In my half forward line, probably the narkiest man ever, but probably one of the most underrated players, the own club man, Owen Larkin. I always felt Larks never really got the credit for what he did to that Kilkenny team. He used to play left half forward for us, and he would often be back bailing me out over the corner back, and then 10 seconds later is up supporting someone and getting a score at the other end of the field. And like, he went back and played centre back for a club this year, and was just as good. Probably one of the most contrarious lads, and we'll give out about Anton, but by God, when you go into the trenches, there's no one better than Owen Larkin. And when he was left half forward, you always knew, for JJ in front of you and Owen Larkin in front of him, that you had good protection, and get a ball, hit it as high and as long as you possibly could, and Owen Larkin would be under the lead or win it or break the ball. But some of the scores he used to get, like, I always remember the county final with us when we beat Shamrocks in 2011. I think we scored 113 or 112 that day, and he got 111 of it. He was one of the greatest performers I ever seen that day. I still wonder what he did with that wide that he didn't convert. But look, and a great club man as well, so he'd be my half forward.
And the only man probably with time named that from Larky time, with about 10 minutes to go in All Ireland, he came to the fore all the time.
Yeah, he did, and even what jumps to mind, I think it was 2011, we played Galway in the first round in Tullamore, lovely Saturday evening. Draw game into the dying minutes, and Larks got 3 points in a row to win the game for us. He was that type of a lad. When you needed him, and when you needed someone to step up, he'd always chip in and be there, and you know, and evolved as well in his game in his latter years when he went in corner forward and did that roving role, did it brilliantly, because Brian used to say the same thing to him all the time: own your corner forward, but I don't want you there, just go and influence the game. Where you need to be there. If that's hooking a lad back corner back, or picking a pass off a lad midfield, or scoring at the other end. He was so intelligent, and Brian didn't give that role to many people. Actually, I don't think he gave it to anyone else, but Larks had such an IQ, such a great brain for being in the right place all the time. It was so consistent, Brian's message before every match to Larks on his corner forward: Larks, your corner forward, but I just want you where the ball is. I just want you have an innate ability to be where the ball is, where it's landing, where it's breaking, where there's danger, and you will be there. I just continue to do it. And he used to say that to Larks, and everyone just knew that, and he went out, and he naturally would go where the ball would be.
Okay, so far you've named Owen Murphy, JJ Delaney in your full-back line, Tommy Walsh in your half-back line, James Chaff as Patrick midfield, Owen Larkin from your own club, the Village, half-forward. Have we any surprises left for the last one?
Yeah, well, look, without being too unbiased or something like that, I'm going to go outside the county and I'm going to say Owen Kelly from Tipperary. I suppose, like you, Owen, we always remember that famous day in Kieran's College when the rumours came through that Owen Kelly was coming to us, and we were in fourth year at the time. Got to know him obviously for that couple of years there, and then obviously played with him in LIT as well, but probably more so when I got to Markham, I could see the genius of him in a couple of All-Irelands, and any time he played Tip, we were always lined up against each other, and the guy was just a genius. He was had all the skills in the game. What he did for Tipperary, probably through their lull years, I think is more impressive, when probably things were bad in Tipperary, and the performance he would have put in Munster campaigns was just awesome. And wasn't blessed with unbelievable speed. Had a good turn, but wasn't blessed with speed. But by God, he got wrists. And like often, he would have got the ball, and I'd be right up on him, and I'd have him this time, and he'd throw it up and be able to take a step back, and with wrists would just whip the ball over the bar, and I'd be like, how did he actually do it? I had him every way he turned, and some way he just pulled the score out. And I remember hearing the story, I don't know how true it is, but it kind of gives you an insight if it is true, of Owen Kelly, when he'd get the ball and his back to the goal. I think Brendan Cummins said that he used to be able to hit the ball over his shoulder, over the bar. And he used to do that a lot. And someone asked him one day, how do you know where the score is? And he just goes, I just look at the other end of the field and see where the posts are from there. And that was my reference point. And that was the kind of genius that this guy was operating at. And I loved Mark and Owen Kelly. That sounds weird, because I knew Mark and Owen Kelly, I was marking the best. And I knew I had to push myself to be at the best to be able to survive with this lad. And we had some great battles. And the thing about Owen is, if you wanted to play hurling, he'd play hurling. If you wanted to dish it out, he'd give it back to you every bit his way. If you wanted a little bit of a verbal, he'd give it back to you as well. And was a really colourful character. And no matter what happened on the game, and there was a few saucy strokes, he'd turn around, shake your hand, and wish you the best or commiserate with you. And that was the way it always was. Fair and sporting. And, you know, realise at the end of the day, it was just a game. For 70 minutes, you go toe-to-toe, but you leave it on the pitch and then you walk off together.
What a team and what a player you finished with, Owen Kelly. As you said, one of the greatest forwards that Tipperary have ever produced. Brilliant team, Jackie. Thank you so much. Just to finish up, I have a little quick fire round for you.
Yeah, shoot.
Who is the best player in the game currently?
Keen Lynch, for his overall ability. Box-to-box player, has all the skills. But a really, really top quality player. Always has the right thing with the ball.
Brilliant. Okay. Who is the best player you've ever played against? You don't necessarily have to have marked him.
Ever played against? Owen Kelly, yep. Tipperary.
Okay. And you did mark him. And you went through him. Brilliant. Is it a hurl or a hurley?
Oh, hurl, without a doubt. H-U-R-L. Get it into your head, people. H-U-R-L. Hurl.
Hoops on your hurl or no hoops?
No hoops. And it was a good lad that you would know, Damien Buns Clifford in Kieran's College, that changed me from hoops to no hoops.
Adidas World Cups or Puma Kings?
World Cups. Love them.
What colour grip did you use?
I was fairly boring. Black or blue. The way I used to come off the field myself.
or your marker.
It depends.
Sweeper or no sweeper?
No sweeper.
Choice, Jackie.
Thanks, Brian.
O'Neill's Blizzards or Cummins All-Star?
Ah, come on now. O'Neill's all the way. We're not from Cork.
And finally, Craw Park or Thurles?
That's actually a really good question. I would probably go, you'd have to go for Craw Park. It's the epicenter. But you know what? Thurles is just a magical place to play. The pitch there is unbelievable. The square. There's parts of Thurles that is better than Craw Park. And there's parts of Craw Park that are better than Thurles, but just the mystique and the tradition and, you know, everything that's part of Craw Park, I'd have to go with.
Jackie, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is sponsored by Golan Bake. And remember, Golan Bake is the home of the jambon, and you can buy their products in any supermarket to bake at home. If you haven't already, can you please subscribe to A Hurler's Life? We're on Twitter at A Hurler's Life, Instagram at A Hurler's Life, or you can email me at ahurlerslife@gmail.com.